As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The race is on, and Romain Grosjean, remember him, has made a big impact at IndyCar this year, so much so that he signed for the powerhouse Andretti Autosport team for 2022. In this special crossover episode between the Race F1 podcast and the Race IndyCar podcast, we'll discuss Grosjean's prospects for next year, now that his deal has been announced, and how he's adapted so well to racing stateside. I'm Ed Straw, and joining us to answer all your Romain Grosjean questions is Jack Bennion. Well, I feel I'm a poor substitute for regular IndyCar podcast co-host J.R. Hildebrand and can only apologise to those who are listening in the IndyCar feed for that. J.R. would be here, but unfortunately he's travelling right now, so it just wasn't possible timing-wise. But I am very pleased to be joined by the other half of the Race IndyCar podcast dynamic duo, Jack Bennion. How much have you enjoyed following Grosjean's progress this year?
Yeah, well, just to start, you've picked the wrong podcast co-host to have on, haven't you? Because I think most people tune in for JR's insight as opposed to mine on the IndyCar podcast. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. We have good fun on that podcast and a lot of cool insight into IndyCar. It's been great to watch Grosjean's progress through the season. And to be honest, JR's been the perfect kind of teammate for that, giving some insight from kind of what it's like to drive these current spec IndyCars and give us some real proper insight into the driving element of what Roman's been, you know, actually doing this year with Dale Coyne Racing. So yeah, it's been interesting to see his progress. He's definitely taken to things quickly, which I'm sure we're going to get into shortly. And now the big move to Andretti.
Yeah, I can definitely endorse the Race IndyCar podcast for those listening in the F1 feed. J.R. Hildebrand does offer excellent insight, and Jack occasionally comes in with some good points as well, as you're about to find out as we delve into to Grosjean. So let's get straight into the details of his move first. How much interest was there in Grosjean's services for next year, and just how big a deal is it for him to be picked up by Andretti Autosport to take the place of Ryan Hunter-Reay, who, after all, he's had disappointing form in recent years, but he is an IndyCar champion and won the Indy 500 back in 2012.
Well, to start with the first part, I guess the sort of decision always came down to Dale Coyne Racing to stay there or to move to Andretti Autosport. That became quite clear early in the kind of silly season exchanges. There was a couple of rumours about Aaron McLaren SP maybe being interested, but I'm not sure there was actually any serious interest from both parties there. I think this decision was always going to come down to these two teams. Andretti, obviously, a lot to benefit by, you know, kind of shaking things up for next season. We'll get into their kind of, you know, their position in IndyCar at the moment and their sort of recent results a bit later in the podcast. But Ryan Hunter-Reay, obviously a former champion and an Indy 500 winner. So someone that's been with the team for 10 years, they'll be very sad to see him go. I know a lot of the team members are very upset to see him sort of leaving, but, you know, all things must come to an end at some point. And I think this is the right time now for Ryan Hunter-Reay to go and seek out a new challenge, as much for him as it is for Andretti to get a new driver in and kind of, you know, mix things up there. But I think that's the resounding sort of thing that I take away from this is a time of change for Andretti and a time where shaking things up is something that's necessary to claw back some ground to the big teams in IndyCar at the moment, because traditionally IndyCar has been three big teams. You've got Chip Ganassi Racing, Team Penske and Andretti Autosport. But what we've seen over the past two seasons since the introduction of the aero screen is Arrow McLaren SP with that huge amount of resource from McLaren on the F1 side and on the IndyCar side coming in and boosting their results. We've got Pato Award fighting for the championship this weekend with Alex Palou's Chip Ganassi racing car. And then we've also got Ray Hall, Letterman Lanigan proving that they can sort of consistently push their way to the front as well and create this kind of a big five as opposed to a big three in IndyCar at the moment. So Andretti, you know, really has to work hard to maintain its spot in this top five, which is something that sounds quite unusual to say maybe for people who kind of watch IndyCar from afar and just expect Andretti to be, you know, one of the best teams. They've definitely fallen behind Chip Ganassi Racing and Team Penske in the last couple of seasons. So there's a lot to do there. And this off-season is a big part of that.
Yeah, and obviously the fact that Grosjean in a few months has managed to make himself somebody that a team like Andretti Autosport want to sign, because they're not going to be down for long, are they? They will come back. That is a huge thing for a driver who, I guess, moved into IndyCar with some uncertainty, because sometimes we've seen F1 drivers move over and they turn up and they disappear. Rubens Barrichello is one that springs to mind from a decade or so ago. So just shows the impact, because there's a lot of good drivers out there in the US. And the fact Grosjean's got in with Michael Andretti's team, just testament to the impact he's made.
Yeah, for sure. Dale Coyne Racing, obviously a small family-owned outfit with very little resource. So that was a big risk for Roman to go into that team, even though it's kind of like the family atmosphere that he kind of was looking for and was hoping to kind of rekindle from his junior Formula days, that he was hoping was going to really help with his kind of, you know, this transition away from Formula One and to something new. He was really keen to have that family atmosphere and have some sort of friendly faces and build up relationships with the people in the team, which isn't always possible in Formula One. It's, you know, in Formula One, it's always possible to know people's names and things, but there's so many people in a team that sometimes it can be quite difficult to get intimate with the team and really kind of, you know, build that bond. So that was something Roman was definitely looking for this year and made the most of. But there's no secret that team struggles for resources and, you know, is definitely not one of the top teams in IndyCar. That's a big kind of risk that Grosjean took to come into a team like that and try and establish himself in IndyCar. It's one some other drivers have managed to make, but some, as you mentioned, have also failed. So it was a big risk, but Roman's performances and the way he's approached this year, you know, that is what has made this move work. And ultimately the performance has been there, you know, from pretty much from the start, to be honest. You know, I can't really pick out anywhere that he's been really poor or anything like that. There's been obviously a steep learning curve coming into IndyCar, but you know, he's done a fantastic job. And as you said, he's kind of earned this step up now to a big team where he can prove whether he is ready to be a championship contender and fight at the front every week.
Well, what should we expect from him from next year? As you said, Andretti Autosport hasn't been on top form this year or even the year before by its lofty standards. Colton Herta has had a couple of wins most recently at Laguna Seca. What should we expect from Grosjean next year in a team that is historically a contender?
His engineer, Olivier Boisson, is coming over with him from Dale Coyne Racing to join Andretti. And those two will kind of keep that relationship going that they built this year. I think that's been really pivotal to, you know, Roman's adaptation into IndyCar, is that relationship with Olivier Boisson. He's French. He's worked with former F1 drivers before, like Sebastian Bourdais at KVSH. So, you know, I think that's a really key part of this. It's going to be really big for, you know, taking Olivier Boisson with him. But I guess he is the person who is closest to judge Roman at this point as a driver and as a prospect, because of all the things that Olivier has seen behind the scenes, obviously engineering Roman and the kind of progression that he's seen over the course of the season. So he's the perfect person to ask whether Roman is ready to fight for the championship, as you asked. And luckily I asked him that question earlier in the week, and he seems to think that Roman has everything that he needs now to really go and do this. Obviously this season, as we said, he's been racing for a team with smaller resources and in a rookie season where, you know, this is one of the closest top single-seater championships in the world, where, you know, it's very competitive, very difficult to fight your way into the top 15, never mind further forward than that. But Roman has proved week in, week out, you know, maybe not consistently yet, but has proven each weekend that he can learn something new, he can adapt, he can, at the age of 35, still be willing and thirsty to learn, you know, as much as anybody. And, you know, he's not coming into this as a prima donna Formula One driver who thinks he knows everything about IndyCar. He's come into this with a totally open mind. You know, he's approached everything in exactly the right way to learn, you know, the most he possibly can out of this journey. And he's added, you know, things like in and out laps are very difficult in IndyCar on tires that are new to him and a big part of IndyCar, because overtaking can be so difficult on track that even those, you know, thousandths of a second in and out of the pits can be vital. restarts he'd not really done before. You know, that was a big part of the transition. The qualifying format is extremely difficult. You have two groups of six or more cars that then fight to go through to a top 12, which then that top 12, the top six of that goes through to the final to fight for the fast six on road courses. So that is a cutthroat sort of element of IndyCar that he's had to adapt to, and immediately was successful in that. So, you know, it's I guess what I'm trying to say is that every weekend he's added something to his repertoire and he's become better each weekend, whether that's, you know, it's not always been consistent and we've not always seen, you know, the best performances week to week, but every weekend we've seen him add something to his CV. And I think that's going to be, you know, something that really rewards him next year when he comes to, you know, joining with the likes of Alexander Rossi and Colton Herta you mentioned. But also I think really important to mention, and a point I keep trying to put across in this whole thing, is that Meyer Shank Racing is another team that is connected to Andretti through an engineering partnership. And that means that also Helio Castroneves and Simon Pagenaud, who are expecting to join Meyer Shank Racing for next year, not yet announced, but something that we're expecting to happen, will also be in the engineering debriefs. So that's Rossi, Herta, Grosjean, Castroneves and Pagenaud, you know, five giants of the IndyCar Championship all together working towards turning around this Andretti ship and improving things for next year. And I think that's going to be, you know, the sum total of that resource is going to be a massive thing for them next year.
Yeah, and I can see Grosjean learning an enormous amount from that. I'm really pleased to see that he's shown how good he is this season, because I was always a great proponent of him in Formula One. Yes, he had his weaknesses and his mishaps, but underlying it all, a seriously fast racing driver. And don't want to say I'm not surprised, because I was a bit unsure how it would go for him, but I'm really pleased to see him going well.
I know before you've talked about Grosjean's style, you know, in Formula One, you've written a lot about Grosjean over the years, and you know, the IndyCar really suits this style of the kind of aggressive turning. He's comfortable with a bit of oversteer as well, which is an absolute necessary thing in IndyCar at the moment. You know, if you watch any sort of onboard, you can see just how leery the cars can be. Although that can be kind of brought back with a bit of setup changes, but fundamentally there is a bit of oversteer under kind of heavy acceleration in these cars. So I think, you know, Grosjean's style was perfect for this as well. And also, you know, we have to mention the braking, which is something we've not quite touched on yet. And something that JR is really, you know, kind of hot on, is that is quite often the last thing that comes to a driver when they switch to a new car, is the, you know, being able to master the braking. And about halfway through the season at Road America, Grosjean made some passes at turn five there, which is really heavy on the brakes. And it just looked like he was, you know, almost 100 meters later on the brakes than everybody else. It was almost almost video game style that what he was doing. And he's continued that through the second half of the season. And I think JR mentioned this in our podcast last week, that he thinks even some of the best drivers in the series will be trying to figure out what Grosjean's doing on the brakes, because he's become so good on the brakes that it's an area of gain, I think, for even some of the more experienced drivers in the championship. So his braking trace, I think, will be very valuable to the Andretti drivers who he kind of joins up with next year.
That might possibly surprise people who follow Grosjean in F1 and remember him moaning about the brakes extensively, particularly in his Haas era. But I think it just shows the braking sensitivity he's got and that style he's trying to get. He always calls it the ART school of driving, which is that kind of quite aggressive turn on the brakes, the sort of V of the corner, if you like, the V-ing of it, if you can use V-ing as a verb. But that's what he defaults to. And it's great that it's working very well in IndyCar. And it's clear, you see all the car control and everything is there. He's got all the ingredients. So it's great to see him making the most of that. But what is also quite interesting is, from what I've seen, the IndyCar paddock and fans seem to have really taken to Roman Grosjean as a character. So how big an impact do you think he's made with that off-track persona, also his swashbuckling race performances?
Oh, it's been massive for him. I remember the pole position at Indianapolis in the third race of the season. You know, he got out of the car and stood on top of the car, and he was greeted with an absolute hero's welcome. And I think at that point he realized how much impact he'd had since he'd come over to IndyCar, and how much, I guess, IndyCar fans respected him for shining a light on their series, I guess. And he's just been totally welcomed just because of his kind of open nature, his kind of, you know, I don't want to say he's made fun of his fiery Bahrain accident, but he's definitely taken it with a kind of humorous slant, and wears a hat with the Phoenix on, which is kind of his new self-proclaimed nickname, if you like, that, you know, he wears this hat all the races. And basically all the way through the year, the fans have been giving him fire department t-shirts from every kind of area that he's been to, where he's been racing, which has been fantastic to see. You know, obviously it was such a significant event in his life that you know, in so many ways was a negative. But, you know, he kind of feels like he's been reborn from this accident and has come out of it with a kind of fresh attitude to life, a new take on life. And I think that's, you know, part of that is embracing this kind of humorous side of him, you know, kind of, you know, overcoming this massive part of this massive adversity and coming out the other side of it, which is massive. And, you know, that did set back his IndyCar career significantly when he decided not to go full time for this season because of the incident. And, you know, he wanted to kind of seek out what oval racing was going to be like at a later date, which we'll come to in a minute. But, you know, I think what we've seen this year is a reinvigorated Roman, which in turn has impressed his family and brought his family on side. They've loved the road trips they've done in their RV called Raoul across the United States between races. They've really adapted to the American way of life when they've come over from Europe. And I think it's, you know, if it's not common knowledge, then it's the worst kept secret in IndyCar. But Roman's been, you know, looking for houses and, you know, is keen to bring the whole family over to America now so that he doesn't have to travel back and to between Europe and America next season. So I think the family's impact on this can't be underestimated. They've been a big part of this, but I don't think it would have come down to them if Roman wasn't enjoying IndyCar as much as he has been. And it's very, very clear to see from anyone who, you know, just follows him on social media or, you know, has seen him talk about IndyCar that he's absolutely loving this championship. He loves the competition. He loves the drivers. You know, it's quite an unusual sort of championship in the sense of we had the three drivers who are fighting for the championship, Joseph Newgarden and Pato O'Ward and Alex Palou in a press conference yesterday. And they were asked about why they're not playing more mind games with each other or they're not more aggressive to each other in light of the kind of needle in battle that's going on with Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen in Formula One at the minute. And Newgarden basically said it's a, you know, he feels like this is a very respectful championship and it's something that Roman has enjoyed. The fact that he can spend time with the drivers off the track and really get to know them and become friends with them, as well as competing with them, you know, really aggressively on track. So it's finding that balance of being competitive on the track and, you know, going wheel to wheel and doing a lot more wheel banging than Formula One allows because these cars definitely allow that. And finding that balance against being friends off the track as well, which is an atmosphere that Roman has really excelled in and really enjoyed.
Yeah, we saw a great example of the wheel banging when he was lapping Jimmy Johnson at Laguna Seca at the Corkscrew. It shows you can get away with a bit of that. But it's great to see Grosjean. I think reinvigorated was the word you used. And he was always quite cheerful about his lot in F1 towards the end when he was really struggling with a Haas that just wasn't competitive. But I imagine just being put into a position where for the first time since 2013, basically, he's able to fight for top positions has really just made him enjoy racing, and you know, it's great to hear that he's adapting so well to life over there. We've talked a little bit about what he's done well this year. He's basically done everything but win a race this year. He's had that pole position you mentioned, a couple of second places, that Zanardi-esque drive to third at Laguna Seca. In terms of why he's taken to IndyCar so well, it seems like he's taken it very, very seriously. This isn't kind of a second prize to Formula One, is it? Sometimes it varies from driver to driver. Some take it very seriously. Some, I think, perhaps underestimate it. So he must have taken a very studious, shall we say, attitude to this, given he's also coming into IndyCar at a point where there's this big changing of the guard going on with some of the older veteran drivers kind of being edged out by some of the young chargers, but there's still also high-quality performers throughout the field. So for Grosjean to kind of insert himself into that narrative at the same time as a kind of mid-30s F1 convert, I guess really testament to the effort he's put in.
Yeah, I'd not heard Roman say this out loud, but I'm sure part of the motivation for this is, you know, for how long he's kind of been misunderstood or criticized in Formula One and the number of years he spent in the middle of the pack or the back of the pack for whatever reason. You know, some people will say, you know, he could have done better in his earlier career to kind of avoid that situation of being consigned to a team at the back of the grid and all that kind of stuff. But for me, I personally think this has been a big motivation that he wants to show that he is this driver that is good enough to do this. And that if he was given the chance in better Formula One machinery now, he'd be a better driver and do a better job. And I think that's a fundamental part of what we've seen this year. I also agree with what you were saying about him becoming or being a really quick learner and taking a studious approach. I remember speaking to, again, his engineer, Olivier Boisson, in the pre-season test. And one of the things we discussed was something that you wouldn't even think about really normally, but the kind of the way data is presented in IndyCar is, you know, obviously there's different software used and compared to Formula One. So, you know, it's not like someone from Formula One can just come in and immediately understand all of the data perfectly, you know, straight away, because it's a totally different system of how that's presented. So even that is something that he had to immediately kind of adapt to, but it took him a few hours to really, you know, get into working out what was going on with the data and stuff like that. So yeah, I think studious is the right word. He's really, you know, it might look like he's having fun on the outside, and it might look like he's embracing this kind of new Romain Grosjean, the reinvigorated Romain Grosjean, but behind the scenes, there's no doubt there's a lot of hard work gone on here. And, you know, I think Andretti and Honda have been really impressed with what they've seen from him in terms of his progression, because, you know, we mentioned it early on, the fact that he's learned something new every weekend. You don't do that by not being studious. You know, he's not looking into getting better at stuff every weekend. You know, he's working really hard at specific areas that he knows he's, you know, fallen short on in places. You mentioned, you know, some of his good results this year. He's had 3 podiums, but the street courses have been quite difficult for him to extract the pace out of the car. And also, you know, it's been a team issue as well, given Roman the car that he needs to really find the lap time. But, you know, it's an example of him identifying his flaws and weaknesses and working on them extremely hard over the course of the season. So yeah, studious is definitely the right word, Ed. And I think we'll see the same approach for him next year, especially when he's got fiercer competition, because, you know, this year he's got, you know, Ed Jones, who's raced in IndyCar before, but you know, it's a much smaller team, Dale Coyne Racing, as you mentioned earlier, and he's going into a team with 2 proven IndyCar winners. Many people believe Alexander Rossi is a future champion and has that ability. Colton Herta, there's no doubt he's got the potential to be a future champion. So Roman's going into this team not necessarily as the top dog, even though he's the biggest name going into this team. So he's still going to have to work extremely hard to get the most out of this deal. But from what I've seen this year, I think he's going to be right there.
It's interesting the point you make about Grosjean perhaps proving people wrong a little bit. I think you're right. There's an element of that motivation, because it's been a long time since he's won a race in anything. You would go all the way back to GP2, a category in which he was outstanding. And Grosjean's F1 career, it was frustrating. I found it frustrating, so he must have found it multiples more frustrating than I did, because he's such a good driver. I'd rate him as one of the best few drivers never to have won a Grand Prix of those who did have a F1 careers. I think he's that good. And we saw some of those performances in the Lotus days when he was in a front-running car, when he was genuinely outstanding. But and I think a driver in that position, you can kind of go two ways. You can get a bit bitter about it and a bit chippy, or you can channel it, which I think is what Grosjean has done. And yeah, he certainly had some mishaps in Formula One. He does have a mistake in him, sometimes in slightly odd circumstances. And obviously he hasn't been completely flawless in IndyCar this year, but a driver with a huge amount of talent, just in terms of that underlying ability and that base speed. He's in F1, he was as quick as anyone. And so that's going to apply to IndyCar as well. You mentioned him passing ovals, and an important decision Grosjean has made is that he is willing to race on the ovals, which originally he discounted. I think he did do Gateway this year, which is the short 1.25 mile oval, but he'll take on the big one at Indianapolis, one of 5 ovals on the calendar. So why has he changed his position on ovals? I guess the first thing was he wasn't going to get into an Andretti car without committing fully to the championship.
Well, he never ruled out ovals. He always just said that, you know, he wanted to test, and he wanted to see what it was going to be like and whether it was going to be something that was for him. And I think you were right to mention Gateway. That was his debut. But shortly before that, he had a test at the same venue, and that's where he kind of cut his teeth and learned a little bit more about it. And I think it's fair to say, you know, he wasn't totally taken by it, but he enjoyed it. And the bigger element of that test was having his family there. That was the first time some of his kids had seen him in a car in person at the track, which was a big thing for him making this decision to think about whether to do ovals next year. That played a big part. So to have them there and see their dad kind of on track and what that was going to entail was a massive part of that. But the test went really well. And then the race, that was fantastic at Gateway. I thought, you know, he ended up a lap down because of some mistakes from the team on strategy, really. But to be honest, he was making passes further back in the field. So some, you know, people will always say that, you know, it's always easier to make passes further back in the field, but he was working his way into the top 10, extremely competitive, some really inventive overtaking for an oval. You know, there was quite a lot of discussion at the time about how he was doing it with the aerodynamics of the car and clearing his front wing to get some clean air onto the car to grip up the front of the car into the sort of mid corner and exit. So some really kind of, I guess the Americans would probably say an unusual take on a short oval driving wise, but it worked out for him, and he made some some really significant overtakes and looked very at home on an oval. So I think you're right. I think it would have been, I don't think it would have totally stopped this deal, but I think Roman would, you know, he wants to win the championship next year and he knows he needs to do the Indy 500 to win the championship because it's double points and you can't avoid it. So I think the deal might have happened in a partial schedule. We'll obviously never know that, but I think you're right to point out that the oval part of it makes it much easier. It makes it much easier from a winning the championship point of view, but it also makes it much easier from a sponsorship point of view, because we all know that the Indy 500 is arguably the bigger event than the championship itself. And it's the event that the sponsors care about. It's the one that the, you know, people are watching on television and the one that the sponsors want to get involved in. So it will have made this deal much easier from a, you know, from a commercial aspect as well to make this happen and to satisfy the demands of both Grosjean and Andretti in that deal. So yeah, I think there was quite a few elements that made the ovals quite important to the deal. It was his family. It was the commercial aspect. It was the winning the championship aspect. So yeah, key part of this deal coming together was the oval situation. And for me, I've not seen anything that tells me that he won't be able to finish in the top 10 on the ovals next year and potentially compete for a top five. I think the Indy 500 is, so as we mentioned, is double points and it's so pivotal to the championship. We've seen Joseph Newgarden's chances of winning the title be, you know, massively eroded over the last two seasons because of double points at the Indy 500, because he struggled to finish well there. So that'll be a big you know, big cause for investment from Grosjean and the team to get that right and to make sure they're ready. Andretti historically a very good team at the Indy 500, so you know, think they'll be positive that they can get Roman bedded in quickly, and he should have a test in October where he'll get some time on the track before things start to kick off in sort of early next season, before the actual Indy 500 starts. So great thing about the Indy 500 is so much practice that there's plenty of time to get the car dialed in and to get used to the track. And that's why we've seen drivers come in and be particularly successful as rookies in the past as well.
And one comparison that has to be made, obviously people might look at the results on paper for Grosjean this year and think, well, they're decent, but they're not stunning. But obviously a Dale Coyne Racing driver having their rookie year and they're moving into one of the big teams, that's been quite a successful trajectory for a certain Alex Palou, hasn't it? Who's almost certain to win the championship. It's not quite done, but it would take a bit of a disastrous weekend this weekend for that to go wrong. So is it possible Grosjean could do something like that, bearing in mind the possible limitations of the Andretti kit?
Well, Alex Palou only needs to finish 11th in the championship this weekend to seal the championship, and that's in his second season of IndyCar. His first season, as you mentioned, there's quite a few similarities between the two. Palou's first season came in Dale Coyne Racing in this car that Roman is driving now, albeit with a different number on the front. So there's comparisons we can draw, and I don't think you can disagree that Grosjean's rookie year has been much more successful than Alex Palou's. But, you know, he's already ahead of where Alex Palou finished in the championship last year and has already scored 30 odd more points than he did last season, despite the fact that he's not done the double points Indy 500 and missed two Texas races. So just from that alone, you can see, you know, how important that's been. And obviously you have to factor in scenarios like this that the team can make improvements year to year, and that you know, there can be things that you find in the car and that can push you forward. And also, I think it's fair to say Alex had some pretty bad luck in places last year. I know bad luck's a bit of a, you know, a cursed phrase in motorsport, but I do feel like there were things out of his control that really, you know, hurt his points total last year. But at the same time, Roman's not had a clear run of it and not been totally, you know, outside of you know, having bad luck as well. So I think we can, you know, looking at this, I think Alex Palou has gone into a Chip Ganassi team that's much more sorted than the Andretti Autosport outfit at the moment. Ganassi's had, you know, three of its four drivers in the top five in the championship pretty much for, you know, the majority of the season, with Alex Palou, Scott Dixon and Marcus Ericsson, another ex-F1 convert, you know, doing a really good job there. And their team has just been phenomenal this year, so consistent and able to win races and just, you know, really, really consistent, which is what you need to win in IndyCar. Andretti, obviously, as we talked about, very peaky. Colton Herta has been able to win from pole and, you know, has really struggled in other races. So we've seen that struggle with James Hinchcliffe, Ryan Hunter-Reay and Alexander Rossi across the course of the season as well. And their championship positions tell you everything you need to know about, you know, where we're at. You can have some bad luck, but you can't have bad luck all season. That just, I don't think that is something that you can really, you know, get away with. So yeah, interesting comparison between Grosjean moving from Delcoin to Andretti and Palou moving to Ganassi. I think Palou moved to a better team in the sense of where it was at and how it was poised to succeed. But, you know, I think Ganassi definitely took a step forward for 2021, and there's no reason to suggest that Andretti can't take a step forward for 2022 with all these resources at their disposal for next season.
And with Palou doing what he's done compared to Scott Dixon, his teammate, Grosjean did a little bit of that at Laguna Seca with that great pass at the Corkscrew, which I think you've suggested should be illegal to pass Dixon there.
I think, you know, six-time champion Scott Dixon, you know, he just, you know, I realise this is a difficult kind of thing. I don't remember Dixon being passed by people this season at any point on with like a... an opportunistic, aggressive overtaking move, you know, that somewhere Dixon hasn't lost space, places in the pits, or hasn't given up a position because he thinks it's wiser not to battle. You know, I that was a totally opportunistic move from miles back from Romain Grosjean. And I just thought, you know, it's very rare that you see Scott Dixon get overtaken. And it's unheard of that you see him get overtaken at the Corkscrew of all places. So yeah, that was a summary. I think there was also the move on the outside of Pato O'Ward at turn four, which was in part down to fresh tyres, but it was still, you know, crazy that he attempted that to go around the outside of that corner, which is very unusual, and made that work brilliantly. So yeah, a good sign that, you know, I think if you've got any reason to kind of follow this story and watch Grosjean at Andretti next year, it's that, you know, the most fun part of motorsport, the overtaking, is what Grosjean's got nailed down, and it is arguably the thing that he's, you know, absolutely best at. So we're definitely going to see some entertaining races for him next year, wherever he ends up finishing in the championship.
Yeah, he's absolutely going to be exciting to watch, and yeah, I'll be keeping a close eye on him. And I think a lot of people in F1 will be, because there's quite a few drivers, I think, who've had their eyes open to IndyCar, not just by Romain Grosjean's success, but Marcus Ericsson's success. He's had a couple of wins this year, including that one after being launched into the air in Nashville, which is an unorthodox way to go about it. But I think future converts from F1 will have to be careful not to underestimate the scale of the challenge over there in IndyCar. Well, thanks very much, Jack Bennion, for your insight. You can, of course, catch all our IndyCar and F1 coverage on therace.com, and don't forget the hyphen. Usually, I urge everyone to try out our sister podcast titles, but effectively, this has hopefully given those listening in our F1 podcast feed a taste of the Race IndyCar podcast. As I mentioned, J.R. Hildebrand is the regular co-host on that and offers some fascinating insight he's well worth listening to, so I'd urge you to subscribe to that. Also, make sure you check out our YouTube channel. We'll turn our attention back to F1 now on this podcast, and we'll be back soon with everything you need to know from the Russian Grand Prix.